podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much that we... I don't know if I have anything clever to say.
I was just waiting for it.
Nah.
I love books so much that I inserted one into the top of my Super Nintendo and tried to play it. It didn't work.
Interesting.
That's why whenever we talk about Lord of the Flies, I picture all the characters in 16 bits.
That's ridiculous. Well, I gotta say, as much as we love books, do we love books as much as Matilda?
You know, we might not love books as much as Matilda.
That bitch reads so much.
I definitely wasn't reading Charles Dickens when I was 4.5 years old. In fact, I wasn't even reading when I was 4.5 years old.
I can safely say that I was not either.
5, though.
Yeah, kindergarten.
I'm pretty sure everyone in our family was a kindergarten or earlier reader.
And, I mean, we were reading chapter books by the first grade, and that was impressive, but that's not even... It was right. Like Encyclopedia Brown.
Also, the things that she's calling children's books, like The Secret Garden and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and Fellowship of the Ring.
I thought that was hilarious, too. Like, I read through all the children's books. Oh, what was your favorite? The Secret Garden. And I was like, shouldn't it be, like, Curious George? Right. Like, an actual children's book? Grown-ass adults read The Secret Garden, woman.
Yeah, right? I don't think I could have handled any of those books before I was probably 14.
Maybe that library follows the same logic as ours and, you know, classifies Dracula as YA.
Yeah, and what was the other one we were looking up?
Oh my, the, no. What did they, Love in the Time of Cholera.
That's no, right, no.
The Scarlet Letter.
The Scarlet Letter, that's what it was. So apparently classics are all YA
yeah,
now.
Yeah, apparently. Well, that one cover, the one that was YA of the Scarlet Letter, had like one of those stupid white and pink flower themes they're doing on all that shit, so it looks like Twilight. I'm like, if someone who likes Twilight picks up the Scarlet Letter, they're gonna like kill themselves.
They're gonna be pissed.
Those books have nothing to do with each other at all. Oh my god.
I want to hop on the Johnson County Library website and look for, like, Finnegan's Wake or something.
Ulysses.
Y-A. Like hell it is.
Thank you for your logic, library.
Who are you people?
Jesus.
Maybe the library staff are all as precocious as Matilda.
They just can't help themselves.
All right. I read it when I was 5. It's YA.
But then where does the other stuff go? That's what I want to know. Yeah, so in case you couldn't tell, we're doing Matilda. I guess really quick, if there's even a spoiler policy needed for this book, we do have a spoiler policy, which is to say that we spoil everything in the book. If you are getting spoiled by this discussion, though, you obviously didn't have a childhood.
Yeah, this isn't like The Hunger Games, where maybe you haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, this is Roald Dahl.
So, yeah, that being said, Matilda has mental powers, and she moves in with Miss Honey at the end.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, they're lesbians. Oh no, that's not what that means.
Wait a minute.
That's not even close. Misdirection.
That is totally... Yeah, so why did we choose this book? Well,
It's a classic children's book.
Roald Dahl is one of the most well-known children's authors.
Yeah, off the top of my head, if I had to name 3 quickly, he would probably be the first one, honestly.
Someone just said list YA books.
Yeah, like list 3 YA authors. Roald Dahl. Lois Lowry.
Yeah.
And the third would be like, what book did I really like? Yeah. Probably something stupid like R.L. Stine.
Awesome. K.A. Applegate and Animorphs. What up? We should do Animorphs sometime. Yeah. We have to read like 10 of them though to have.
Yeah, would that take like 2 days?
Yeah, it'd be awesome. But yeah. if you haven't read Matilda, you've read James and the Giant Peach, you've read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Fantastic Mr. Fox. The BFG.
The Magic Finger.
The Witches.
Danny the Champion of the World. or his Boy, which is his autobiography, which is extremely popular as well.
I haven't read that one.
I've heard it's awesome. I haven't read it either. So, I mean, this guy is crazy influential in writing and in, they've made books of all of his movies. Movies of all of his books.
One of those.
Excuse me. Not all of them are good. I actually might go so far as to say none of them are good, but that's for another day.
Plus, I think both of us would say we feel a little bit of extra kinship with this book because it involves a really smart kid, and, well, we were both really smart kids.
Yeah, I loved this book when I was little. It did not occur to me how smart Matilda was until I read it when I was older, though.
Yep.
Because now that I've actually read Great Expectations and Pride and Prejudice and all that stuff that she's reading, I'm like, wait a minute.
Pride and Prejudice was, like, the easiest book on that list, too.
Yeah. There was some crazy shit on that list.
You mean Steinbeck and...
When she said she was reading Steinbeck, I was like, seriously?
And Hemingway?
Yeah. Who gives a 5-year-old Hemingway? Like, well, what the hell is wrong with you?
Apparently the librarian in her village does.
Well, Mrs. Phelps, you're crazy. You're crazy.
You crazy girl.
Yeah. So, obviously the protagonist of this story is Matilda.
Yeah. Like, no argument.
Ben and I were having... Done. A conversation about the other characters and the characterization in the book and how it was. And we pretty much decided that Matilda's the only really developed character in the book.
Yeah, everyone else is more or less an archetype, I think.
I think they're a little more developed than, say, the Giver when we were saying Jonas is basically the only character. Because those characters are even less well-defined than these ones.
Right, I mean, these characters are definitely, so, I think definition versus depth.
Uh-huh.
And so, we know who all of these people are supposed to be. We don't necessarily know all of their internal workings.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of them, well, other than Matilda, none of them are really being subjected to pressure.
Yeah. And, well, I guess Miss Honey, to a degree.
To a degree, but she's already been through hers. Yeah, like, she's the finished product of that pressure already.
Uh-huh. And the trench bowl's just fucking insane.
And a dangerous child abuser.
Yeah, who should be in prison.
Yeah.
Let alone not headmistress.
Plus, she's probably a murderer.
Yeah.
It's implied.
Also that.
It's implied.
Also that. Oh, I guess we've kind of already started, but I did want to give our plot synopsis just because we like giving plot synopsis.
We do enjoy that.
Do you want to?
Sure. The plot synopsis. Smart girl surrounded by morons performs rage miracles.
I really liked the insertion of rage in front of miracles for that sentence because it totally does just come out of her being so pissed off. Which is awesome.
So, if Matilda has Jedi powers, she must be a dark side Jedi.
Because it comes from the rage! Because
it's coming out of anger!
Although later she does manage to do it without...
She does it for justice.
Yes. So maybe she is a good little... I don't know. The point of view of the book is third person, although it mostly focuses around Matilda. Although it's not... necessarily third person close, because the narrator has a voice of his or her, I guess, own. And one of the things I thought was kind of interesting is that we read two books in a row that had third person unreliable narrators.
Yeah.
The narrator Matilda is not as unreliable as in Hitchhikers, but they're definitely a little quirky.
They're a little biased. A little quirky. The opening of the book
is hilarious.
Is the narrator talking about, talking about people's children and talking to people about their children and how you really, as unfortunately, don't have the option of saying, well, Johnny's a little shitheel who should be thrown out the nearest upper story window.
Yeah.
Because the parents don't want to hear that, and they've already convinced themselves most of the time that Johnny is the most wonderful little boy who was ever born. Uh-huh. And, yeah, I'd say that's true.
Parents do tend to think a lot of their kids, and even if, you know, parents aren't being overly friendly to their, or giving their kids too much credit, I guess, they're still all subject to the, like, my kid does this. Because I know our dad has embarrassed me multiple times just randomly, like, in a conversation, being like, Gabs has done this and this and this. And I'm like, why are you telling people that? Like, nobody cares. And he's like, she's awesome.
And parents do tend to do that. And, you know, I teach trombone lessons. And my younger students are, you know, about 10 years old. And I've dealt with some real winners in the past. And even, you know, some parents are actually, despite what the narrator says, fairly realistic about it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be like, just, like, help him to be functional in band class so he doesn't hate everyone and everything and disrupt the class.
Mm-hmm.
I've had several parents tell me that before. Okay, I can do that. But I've also had, I'd say I'd had an equal number of students who, that's what their parents needed to say, who thought that the kid actually was going to be, like, really good at it someday. Yeah. Oh, well, he just has so much potential, doesn't he? He doesn't do well at anything else. Why do you think he's going to be good at this? This is still a thinking skill.
Yeah. I'd say, actually, the parents of the kids I work on with for the ACT are actually generally a lot more realistic. They admit, I don't really know anything about this test. Are my expectations reasonable? What can you do for them?
Right.
And then I kind of help set a goal that actually works.
Right. Hi. So that would actually make for an interesting podcast topic all on its own,
yeah.
I think.
But the irony of what's going on here is he opens with these three pages just talking about how all this shit he would love to tell parents about how crappy their kids are and how they just think the world, and then goes, oh yeah, but sometimes there are also parents who don't give a shit about their kids. And here's Matilda, who's like one of the world's greatest geniuses, and her parents do not care at all.
Yeah, and for that matter, a really great kid.
Yeah.
Just, like, smartness aside, she's a really sweet kid.
I was kind of thinking, actually, that it's miraculous because I was, just finished Sway, and they were talking about, you know, if someone expects something of you, you tend to fulfill that expectation. They also talk about it with teachers. If a teacher thinks a student will do well, they tend to do well because they might help them or give them a little bit of slack. And if they think you're a screw-up, you tend to be a screw-up.
Yep.
And I was like, if her parents think she's such a crappy person and, like, think she's a screw-up, it's actually kind of amazing that she is such a good person.
Maybe, like, that's where the pranks come from.
Yeah.
That's her fulfilling that expectation.
But, I mean, she could be, like, a genius with a bad attitude and be, like, just one of those horrible kids who...
That's true.
But she's not.
She'll be like the bitter guy from Outliers.
Yeah.
As long as we're going to invoke nonfiction that we've read in the last year. I guess should examine the characters a little bit here. So Matilda, we've already mentioned, is a genius. Reads ridiculous works of literature at the age of 5. Can multiply large numbers in her head without having to stop to calculate them.
Yeah, like, to the degree where, you know, she can do all the basic ones really fast, and you give her a difficult one, and she just immediately gets it. So, presumably you'll be good at other types of math as well, but...
One assumes Roald Dahl didn't go too deeply into determining the exact length and depth of her genius. Just enough to establish that it's there.
Yeah.
And she's emotionally mature.
Uh-huh.
Because she can have a pretty decent conversation with an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a little bit, I don't know if mischievous is really the right word. She kind of has a mischievous type response to injustice.
Yeah, like... because
that's how she can fight at her age and size.
That was kind of the thing that the narrator points out, is in a family with a mom and a dad and an older brother, a 5-year-old girl is on the lowest rung of the power scale. She doesn't have any power to fight back or, you know, argue at her parents to change their mind, so what can she do? Well, she can pull little pranks on them, you know, that they'll fall for because they're not as smart as her, and kind of put them in their place subtly for a little bit, like a week at a time.
Kind of wonder where she came from with that family, actually.
Yeah.
Because, well, the brother is only mentioned insofar as he exists.
Yeah, we know nothing about him.
I guess Dad is trying to make him do sums, but we don't know if he's actually successful at it.
The father's presumably mildly smart and clever. He manages to get
clever,
away.
Clever, yes. Smart, I question.
Yeah, okay. Well, he's not a complete idiot.
Yeah.
In all walks of life.
He's crooked, is what he is. He's bragging about the things he does to make a used car palatable to somebody, and oh, this will make it run smooth as anything for, you know, like 200 miles.
Yeah.
And then it beats crap, so it's going to fall apart.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, ends up with the police on his tail and fleeing the country at the end of the book. Because he is, in fact, not just crooked, he is actually a criminal and doing business with stolen cars, yeah, as it turns out.
Matilda's mother could potentially be smart, I guess. She just doesn't care about learning or anything at all.
Yeah, she was maybe the most interesting character. After Matilda, I think she's the most developed.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. The scene about Matilda's mother that surprises me the most is when she sneaks the bleach stuff into her dad's like hair oil bottle and shakes it up, and he accidentally bleaches his hair, and the mom's just, like, making fun of him, like, your hair's all gonna fall out, you idiot, go take a shower! And he, like, runs off to go take a shower, and Matilda says, you know, Daddy does some pretty silly things sometimes, doesn't he? And her mom says, oh, you know, you'll learn when you grow up that men are not as smart as they think they are, or something like that.
Yeah, that was one of the two things I wanted to reference as well, kind of indicating that she's maybe not quite as generic 50s sitcom housewife as she first appears.
Uh-huh. And it also even, like, it was even kind of a moment of connection with her daughter.
Yes.
Like, she doesn't not give a shit about her at all. She obviously doesn't care about her to a pretty large degree because she leaves her alone for afternoons.
Right.
On end when she's 5.
So she can go play bingo.
Yeah. But that was interesting. I was like, hey, wait a minute.
And then the other scene that I wanted to reference is not nearly so positive in her favor. And that's when Miss Honey visits the house to say, hey, your kid's extraordinary, in case, you know, you missed that. Also, she kind of expected to meet a couple of geniuses.
Yeah.
For
like
parents.
A professor and a chemist or something.
Right, like, wow, this kid is amazing. What have you been doing with this kid? This is so cool. And shocked to meet the actual parents. And
why waste with books when you've got a perfectly good telly?
Yes, a perfectly good 12-inch telly. Says the bulging woman with the platinum blonde dyed hair, who... well, likes her stories, apparently, on TV.
Yeah.
You chose books, I chose looks. And look how things turned out for the two of us. You're some old maid school teacher who's what, like all...
23.
23.
She's younger than I am. I know. Like, bitch.
Whereas I live in this fancy house with, like, a husband and everything, without judging the quality of said husband, apparently.
Yeah.
Just having one is sufficient, apparently.
Well, a successful husband.
Right. You know, he does okay.
He makes money.
He was bragging. He made 4,000 pounds in a day.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good.
I'm assuming he doesn't do that every day, but if he does that every week,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty good living, folks.
Yeah.
That's probably about $300,000 a year US.
Yeah, that's
in, 1980 dollars or whenever that book is written.
87, 88, something like that. It's about 20 years old.
So, they're quite comfortable.
Yes. But yeah, this comment that she makes, well, I mean, first of all, it's like totally out of line.
Yeah, it comes out of nowhere. It's not something you say in a first conversation. Yeah. Or any conversation.
You chose books, I chose looks.
Like, even if that's a legitimate point, like, to me, that almost sounds like it should be a tragic statement.
Well, and Ben was saying the other thing that's kind of interesting about that statement is that Mrs. Wormwood is obviously written about as not being that attractive in the first place.
Right.
She's an unfortunate body type, according to the narrator, yes. Who, again, is not entirely reliable, but she dyes her hair this, like, silver blonde color, so she's, trying really hard and probably, doesn't have a lot to work with.
Yeah. It's just like, I imagine that sentence. If I was writing a story where someone spoke that sentence, it would be like two old friends and one of them is pretty successful and maybe the other one is married to someone successful but not happy with her life. And she would say it in a sigh.
Yeah. Oh,
you chose books and I chose looks.
And like, now you're doing well.
Right, and now look at us.
Well, yeah.
You're successful and powerful and I have a nice house and stuff, but
I did like, though, that was obviously supposed to be bad on her part. Roald Dahl was definitely saying, no, guys.
Oh, yeah, I
mean, obviously if your main character is a reading fool and a genius, you're not going to be advocating not doing that.
You'll be advocating looks over books.
But one of the things I also liked about that scene is that we were talking earlier about how male authors tend to write male characters. And one of the things that I think is interesting about this book, it's your protagonist is a girl, like, her trusted adult is a woman, the antagonist is a woman, and then her most interesting parent is her mother.
Yeah, and
the only male significance of note at all is her dad, and he's just a jerk ass.
Right, who's clearly a crooked, maybe not moron, but clearly crooked and not nice.
Yeah. And you have a couple of little, like, boys at the school who we'll probably mention but aren't that important. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting that, like, all of the book actually centers around interactions between women.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well. And they feel feminine to me, for what it's worth.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, these aren't super deep characters, but they all feel like female characters.
Right.
And Matilda definitely feels like a little girl.
Yeah.
So, props. Props to Roald Dahl.
There you go. Go, Roald, go. Even though I'm still convinced they just forgot to print the N on your first book in the middle of your name and never bothered to correct it.
Ronald. Roald. Also, all your other books are boy protagonists, so fuck you.
Yeah, right. Well, how about Miss Honey?
What about Miss Honey?
Well, despite being described as choosing books over looks, the narrator seemed quite taken with her.
Yeah. I like Miss Honey. She's someone who was made to be a teacher of little kids.
Yeah, totally.
One of those people.
Definitely.
And pretty much when he said that, or he had some description of her, he would first see someone how she was like super willowy and like really, really skinny, which I actually think is partially because she doesn't eat anything.
Well.
She probably gained some weight when she moves back into her dad's house. But then he said something like, she had the attitude that could make any 6-year-old trust her instantly.
Yep.
Something like that. And you just immediately go, okay, I know who Miss Honey is.
I think I've met a couple of those people in my life, actually. I don't know that any of them were my teachers when I was 6 years old, but
the really good elementary school teachers are just...
I've met a couple.
Yeah. They're just made for it. And they're always really awesome people, too.
They had a solid third grade lineup at our elementary school.
Yeah. We did.
And I actually think our cousin is one of those people, too.
Yes. I would definitely agree with that.
So, yeah, I mean, if you know the type, then that description totally makes sense to you, I think.
But the thing about Miss Honey is, well, I mean, even though the book's about Matilda, the plot actually revolves around Miss Honey's mysterious past.
Yes, that's true. We don't know much about Miss Honey other than that she's the perfect teacher type, and then Matilda accompanies her to her home after school one day, and turns out she's living in this tiny little college?
College.
She's living in a tiny college. She's living in this tiny little cottage. No furniture except for a couple of crates.
Yeah.
Like, sleeps on the floor, yep. Has a little paraffin-powered stove. That's her only heat source.
She gets 1 pound of pocket money a week, and the 4 pounds a month is enough for her to buy some stuff for her paraffin stove, and some bread, milk, and margarine, basically. And then she just eats a nice big school lunch, and
she's good to go.
Yeah, apparently.
According to her.
I was like, good God.
Well, it's better than the alternative.
Yeah, well.
Is, as it turns out. So, I guess this has to do with the Trunchbull, eh?
Yeah.
So, the headmistress of the school is an Olympic, a former Olympic class athlete.
Which I actually kind of love that detail. Yeah. She's a hammer thrower.
Yes.
And so,
which means that she's a very large, very strong woman,
uh-huh,
to begin with.
Which does not make her bad immediately.
Oh, no, certainly not.
That's actually kind of impressive.
Yes, yes it is. Because the women's hammer, I'm pretty sure, is lighter than the men's, but any woman hammer thrower could kick my ass without even breathing hard.
But what makes the Trunchbull so awful? Well, first of all, she hates children.
Which is a bizarre quality in the headmistress of a primary school.
Why did she want to be the headmistress of that school?
One does wonder.
What the hell was her motivation?
Like, how did she end up in that position to begin with?
And we don't know, and neither does the narrator. He kind of just says, she ended up in this position, but no one really knows how.
She showed up one day.
Yeah. Just like, I'm in charge now.
Her stated goal is to someday run a primary school with no children in it.
Yeah.
So she's a bit crazy.
Yeah. She likes to keep her hammer-throwing arm in shape by throwing children.
Yeah, so now we're getting into this sadistic child-abusing streak of hers. You know, it's one thing to find children distasteful.
Yeah, I mean, we don't like kids that much.
We're not huge fans.
We don't hate kids, but we'd rather not have any.
On average, I prefer not to
be around them. They're fun for short bursts.
And I have friends who don't quite hate children, but not only on average don't want to be around them, they never want to be around them. And so, I can see that part. It, again, not so much in a primary school headmistress.
Yeah.
But what the hell? Like, you're picking people up by their hair. Sometimes you're throwing them however far one can throw.
She threw a kid out of a window.
Yeah, threw a kid out of a window. Picked a kid up by his ears.
Yep.
Apparently has a homemade Iron Maiden that she calls the Chokey in her office.
Yeah, so the description of this is that it's tall enough that you can stand up in it. But there are spikes and nails and shards of glass and all sorts of stuff coming out on each side of the chokey, so that if you don't stand up completely straight, if you lean or crouch at all, it's going to cut you up. And the character we meet who tells us about this apparently tried to pull a bunch of pranks on the Trunchbull. She locked in the chokey for an entire school day.
Yeah.
She like says she comes out and she's like just blubbering and like covered in cuts. And I was like,
yeah, nothing happened as a result of this.
That's medieval. Like, your mom could call the police and have that woman arrested for that.
I mean, there was a good point made by, I can't remember which character said it. Maybe it was Matilda herself, actually. You know, why doesn't someone call the police? Because it's so ridiculous, no one would believe that it could possibly be true.
Yeah, actually.
Like, her violence is so over the top that it just doesn't seem believable. And I wonder, like, that was, maybe that was Roald Dahl acknowledging that this villain was over the top and unrealistic, because just, she's not.
I thought the one of the funniest moments was when, I think it was with the cake, Bruce and the cake, and she's, like, has, like, her riding crop. Yes. And it says something, how about, like, she either says, I can't hit you with this, or, like, Bruce takes comfort in the fact that he knows she can't hit him with it. And I started laughing. I was like, yeah, she can't hit you with her crop, riding crop, but she can, like, throw you out a window.
Right.
Or lock you in the chokey.
She can make you eat 5 pounds of cake in a single sitting. And then apparently she can't eat the riding crop, but she can break the plate over the top of your head.
Exactly. She's bashes a glass platter over his head.
For daring to show her up.
God. Oh, Jesus. And that's kind of a characteristic of Roald Dahl's writing, is this child abuse, or this thread of this dark childhood, but the writing style is so lighthearted and funny that this comes across, like, as almost okay. Not okay, but just, like, not, I don't know, you don't, sometimes don't realize the implications until later.
Yeah, certainly when I was younger and reading this book probably, like, 10 times a year for a 5-year stretch.
Yeah.
Certainly never occurred to me that this was violent, dangerous child abuse.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, just took it in stride.
Like, yeah, he picked a kid up by his ears. Alright, whatever.
Okay.
And the part of the book that I actually, as an adult, found the most disturbing about the Trench Bowl was when Miss Honey reveals that the Trench Bowl is her aunt.
Right, and raised her after her father mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, when Miss Honey was 5, so lived with her for, what, 13, 14 years, something like that.
Yep.
And she says, she just kind of says, you know, the thing she did to me. And Matilda's like, what did she do? And we only get one story of, she said, well, you know, if I took a bath and I wasn't clean enough, she would hold my head under the water.
Yeah.
And Matilda's like, oh my god, like, what else, or something? And she's like, well, I've moved past it. And I was just, like, imagining all this, like, horrible shit that was happening to this little girl just for, like, years on end. Like, I mean, Miss Honey is definitely a victim of child abuse.
Unquestionably.
And, I mean, verbal, emotional, physical, everything. It's a miracle that she's as good-natured and resourceful and nice as she is.
Yeah.
And not fucked up.
And able to appear in public.
Yeah.
And appear normal. And, like, be able to go talk to this kid's parents, for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, that was amazing to me, reading that again. I was like, holy shit.
Yep.
Like, that's not, wow.
Yep. Plus, strongly implied that the Trench Bowl had something to do with the father's disappearance.
Yeah. She was definitely withholding his will. But, yeah, it's also definitely suggested that she was the one who helped enable his murder, so.
Indeed.
This is not a good woman.
No.
And this is some dark shit going on in the background of this book. And it's kind of weird that it's so lighthearted and funny with those elements in it.
Yeah. Something that I appreciate in his writing now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into what actually happens in the book a little bit more.
Yeah.
We referred to some of the pranks earlier, which was her way of dealing with her horrible family.
Mm-hmm.
And then in school, she suddenly discovers she has this power when Trunchbull is doing her horrible Trunchbull thing in front of the class. One of her classmates,
Lavender,
decided it would be awesome to smuggle a newt into the classroom. And
A newt
into the Trunchbull's water pitcher,
uh-huh.
Which was
Oh, go ahead.
Which turned out to be fairly satisfying.
Yeah, and is also apparently one of the Trench Trolls' characteristics, that she loves drinking water out of a pitcher.
Yeah. There's like a dozen of them in the school. Yeah. And so this thing is in the glass, and she's having quite a beautiful reaction to it.
Yes.
Kind of odd that she's afraid of anything.
Yeah.
But maybe it's fear of the unknown, because she doesn't
know, she doesn't know what it is.
What it is, yeah.
Yeah.
And accuses Matilda of doing it, and she is so pissed off by this unfair accusation that she just kind of sits at her desk and hates the glass and the tipping over.
Yeah, basically. She's at first, she's just staring at the glass and the trench bowl in rage. And then she's like, you know, oh, she thinks, I would love to walk up to the front of the room, pour that glass and that newt on her, and just be like, bitch. And she's like, but if I did that, I would get in a lot of trouble.
Yep.
And after that thought pops into her head, she kind of accidentally decides to try and tip it over with her brain. So she's staring in rage and kind of sees the glass shake and goes, oh, crap, like, could I actually maybe do that? So she sits there, tries really, really hard, and yeah, lo and behold, glass tips over and the water and the newt spill all over Miss Trenchbowl, who freaks out and storms out of the room.
Yep. Still trying to blame it on someone, even though no one clearly touched the glass.
Yeah.
So she has this power and then has her afternoon with Miss Honey and comes up with a plan.
Comes up with a plan. That's after right. She hears about Miss Honey's tragic past and all this crap going on.
Gonna defeat the bad guy. Save the girl. And use the power of her brain.
Yeah.
So, she does. She has to practice a little.
She does. That part's not very long.
No, it's not. It
gets into her head, practices it.
Kind of like that it wasn't glossed over, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, I could concentrate really hard and tip this glass over, and now I can lift Luke's X-Wing out of the swamp.
Yeah.
Just to work her way up to it a little bit.
She probably
could.
Yeah, she practiced with a cigar, and then you find out that it's because she wanted to work on moving a piece of chalk.
Yep. So, Trunchbull is coming into the classroom for her weekly terror session. Yeah. And suddenly, chalk jumps out of the tray, starts writing on the chalkboard.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically says,
this, Agatha?
Yeah, Agatha, this is Magnus.
Magnus is Miss Honey's
yes.
dad.
I know what you did. I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And
give my Jenny her wages. Give my Jenny her house.
Or I'm going to come get you.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. And that freaks the fuck out of the trench ball.
She dead faints away.
Yeah.
And then everyone in the school seems to find that quite entertaining.
Yeah, everyone loves that.
Like, teachers come in to help carry her out of the room, and they're joking about it.
Yeah, a kid dumped a pitcher of water on her face to try and revive her. And a teacher comes, who dumped the water all over her? I did. He's like, good thinking.
Good show. Go get another.
Yeah. Like, oh man, who knocked her out? Way to go, Miss Honey. Like, it's like, surely this woman could have been defeated before, but.
So that happens, and about 12 minutes later, the whole story is wrapped up.
The conclusion of this book happens so quickly.
Right, it's like all in a whirlwind.
It's like, Trunchbull leaves, Will is discovered, the house that she's been living in actually goes to Miss Honey, who gets it back. Matilda and Miss Honey are hanging out. Her dad has to leave the country because he's a crook. Her parents decide it's okay if she stays and lives with Miss Honey. The end.
And
that all happens in like 5 pages.
Yeah, it's described about that quickly. She goes home after hanging out with Miss Honey. The parents are cramming stuff into the car because they have to go to the airport. And So, you know, the joys of before bag check fees.
Yeah.
loading their whole life into a car to put on an airplane. And she says, but I don't want to go with you, and runs off and comes back, and can I live with her instead? And her parents go, okay, and drive off.
Yeah. Miss Honey's like, I promise I would pay for everything. It wouldn't cost you anything. And they're just like, well, one less on the plane.
Yep, we're out of here.
Peace.
What?
The brother, like, waves.
And they didn't put up a fight at all.
No. They're not even like, are you sure? Or anything. Just like, yep. Peace. Bye. See you never.
Okay. See you, worthless girl child.
Yeah, it's crazy fast. One of the things that happens in the conclusion, though, is we discover that Matilda can no longer use her mental powers.
Yeah, she gets moved up several grades where she mentally belongs, no doubt.
Yeah, I think, or she gets moved up to the top form, so the sixth grade.
Right.
And Miss Honey basically says, well, I think that now you're using all of your mental power into actually learning and getting challenged that, you know, you don't have all that excess energy to go anywhere.
Right. And that seems to be the basis of the power. Just so much mental energy not getting used that it manifests itself.
Yeah. Maybe I should put into, like, a third grade class, and then I could do that.
Well, if you could perform rage miracles, I feel like you would have managed it by now.
I probably would have. Get pretty mad.
You had three brothers. One of us would have
managed to get
would have fallen victim to it by now.
There's kind of also with this issue of Magnus and the chalk. Although I think that would freak me out pretty bad if it was like writing complete sentences.
Yeah.
Because usually when people are like, a ghost wrote something, it's like a scratch on the wall. You know, like, okay.
Right.
This is like a legitimate message with no one touching a piece of chalk. But there is kind of this very small underlying theme of, like, at the beginning she manages to scare the crap out of her family by making them believe that there's a ghost in the house.
Right, by cramming a parrot with a creepy catchphrase up the chimney.
Yeah, and then at the end she freaks out the trench ball by doing the same thing. So there's kind of this element of these people believing.
Yeah, this is a little...
something.
Little thread of superstition or something.
Uh-huh.
Though, it would be awfully hard to ignore the chalk writing complete sentences without anybody touching it.
I feel like with the parrot, I would have been like, there's a parrot up the chimney.
Right. Like, parrots can do a pretty convincing imitation of a person sometimes, but they still sound like a bird more than they sound like a person.
And you'd be like, there's kind of an echo. That's, where's that coming from? Oh, right. Up the chimney.
Shiver me timbers, or...
rattle my bones.
Rattle my bones. That's what it was.
Rattle me bones.
Rattle me bones. Who did that parrot belong to? A pirate? I kind of like that. I thought that was like a second level joke there.
Yeah.
Like, who's down this thing? That's weird.
So there's a couple of themes in the book. So we already covered child abuse.
Yep.
Obviously, intelligence and learning. But there's also this mental versus physical power going on, I guess, if you wanted to describe it as books versus looks. But you have the trench bowl with her just, like, raw physical power, who's intimidating the crap out of everyone, and no one can do anything to stop her. And then the person who stops her isn't the person who can beat her up. It's the person who can outsmart her.
Yeah, well, that's because anything short of, like, a professional wrestler enrolling his kid in the school, no one was going to be able to beat her up. Though that would have been funny.
Yeah.
That'll be the kid's book that I write. The overbearing, abusive headmistress gets suplexed and chased out of town by a professional wrestler.
Just like copy Matilda word for word.
Except for that resolution, yes.
With, like, the premium on reading and intelligence and stuff, I don't think it's terribly surprising that smarts end up winning the day.
It would have been a lot more surprising had they not.
Yeah, because that's definitely, like, the main thread in the book is, like, let's value, you know, this intelligence and this learning and this curiosity. So that's one of the impressive things about Matilda is she's smart, but she's not too proud of it. Like, she just... interested in learning. And Miss Honey thinks, like, you know, this is awesome that she's just really interested in a lot of things. And not that she, like, just wants to go around telling people how awesome she is all the time.
Right, this kid is remarkable, and part of what's remarkable about her is that she doesn't realize how remarkable she is.
Yeah. And so there's kind of this message here to people, like, be interested in things, but, you know, don't be a jackass about it.
This is starting to sound like one of my education classes. Be a lifelong learner.
Yeah. I mean, basically.
Also, hell yeah, be a lifelong learner. No one should have to tell you that.
Yeah, be interested in things, listeners.
READABOOK. Okay.
But the other thing going on here, which is very common in Roald Dahl and very common in children literature in general, which we touched on, is this idea of children getting the upper hand on adults.
Yeah, this is definitely a prime example of that, even though this child had the extra advantage of being smarter than most adults. Sometimes, in some stories, it drives me crazy. Like, when it happens in a movie, it almost always pisses me off. When it happens in a book, even when I was a kid, it sometimes bothered me. Not quite as often. In a movie, I'm not sure I can think of an example off the top of my head where I really enjoyed it. May I guess Home Alone when I was younger. Maybe.
Home Alone. That movie is also a those guys should be dead 100 times
yeah,
over.
Speaking of
violence.
Speaking of extreme violence. Yeah. Let's see. I'm not exactly sure where the trope comes from. Maybe that's just a way of getting kids to enjoy the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a frequently pretty unrealistic, and to pull it off, instead of having the kid be really smart in most stories, they pull it off by the adults being really dumb. Like, annoyingly dumb.
Yeah, like, totally incompetent.
Yeah. And we talked about that with Wrinkle in Time, right?
Uh-huh.
That was nice that the adults actually sounded kind of like adults.
Yeah, and they weren't, you know, extremely helpful, but they were at least, like, trying and doing good things.
Yeah, and in this book, the adults who are having things pulled over on them were not necessarily all that bright, but they were more getting what they deserved by being horrible than they were just being so dumb they blundered into things.
Right, like the stuff Matilda was doing to her dad, I mean, aside from the parrot, which you could argue that's just being kind of dumb, but if you're superstitious enough, maybe, like, that would legitimately freak you out. You wouldn't think about it.
Right.
But, like, the super glue on the hat, like, no one's checking their hat for super glue before they put it on.
Right.
The bleach and the hair oil, no one's checking for that. And then the chalk floating by itself and writing words, well, that's pretty legitimately freaky.
Yeah, that would scare or disturb a lot of people.
And then we also even have Mrs. Phelps and Miss Honey, who are both legitimately kind, intelligent adults.
Right.
So, not all of the adults are stupid.
Adults who, among other things, also enjoy reading.
Uh-huh, and learning, and again, I guess the librarian's also a woman.
Yep.
So, big cast of female characters for this one. Aw, yeah. So, yeah, let's see. Okay, so, writing style. I mean, we've already talked about it. That the writing style's good, funny, pretty straightforward.
Light, engaging.
Yeah.
One thing that you mentioned earlier in the week was that the pacing of it is really good for young readers.
Uh-huh.
I actually think that's part of the reason I read it so many times when I was younger, because it's paced just bam, 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 bam.
Uh-huh.
And even though that conclusion comes fast, I don't know that it comes too fast.
Yeah, I mean, I would say as, like, a critique, like, the only critique I would have is that them having to run away from the cops at the end does feel a little random.
Yeah.
Just because they abandoned that idea he's crooked for so long. That's the one thing I did like about the Matilda movie is that they have, like, the cops parked outside their house for the movie, so then at the end, like, it makes sense.
Right.
I feel like one sentence of, like, Matilda came home and saw a car sitting outside the house again, Like, even that would make you go, okay, at the end.
Yeah, something to imply that someone's keeping an eye on him.
Yeah. But, again, that's not, like, a huge deal.
Yeah, not certainly not worth getting hung up on.
No, I'm not going to hate the book because of that. It's still fun to read as an adult.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I was giggling a little when I was reading it on the airplane.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely really enjoyed it. I was remembering how much I used to love it as a kid. But, I mean, Roald Dahl's just a really, just a good writer. His books are really entertaining, so.
Yeah, and his influence is out there. Both of us definitely got a big Roald Dahl vibe from the first book or two in the Harry Potter series.
Yeah, the Harry growing up, living in the cupboard under the stairs.
Oh, that's such a Roald Dahl type of thing. Yeah,
being verbally abused by his aunt and uncle. It's like, oh my god, you're just like channeling Roald Dahl right now.
Yeah.
And the tone and style's the same.
Very much so. The first book, if you had told me Roald Dahl was the author, I would have believed you.
Yeah. It's a little too long for a Roald Dahl book.
It is a little long for a Roald Dahl book, though. It's very short for a Harry Potter book.
Yes.
More on that some other time.
Reading 1 in 7 of those books makes you go like, what the fuck is happening? But he's definitely an influence on other children's writers. Really good children's writers tend to have dark or deep thematic elements in the midst of all this, like, kind of goofy, lighthearted stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to read a really good YA book that doesn't have some kind of, you know, tragic or dark or something in there.
Yeah, because to get into deep feelings and to get into the meaning of things, you have to have some darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it can't just be everybody's dumbly happy all the time.
Yeah.
And there are adult books that deal with that idea, the Worthing Saga. And I've said this before, and I'll probably say it again after this, but one sign of a YA book being good is that it shows up on banned lists.
Uh-huh.
Like, any book that ever appears on a banned list, I'm willing to read once.
Yes, me too. And they're usually really good.
Because people don't say, well, this can't be in our library. Well, why not? Because it's really poorly written.
Yeah.
Like, people tend not to get...
They don't say that.
People tend not to get up in arms over that. The library just doesn't carry it because no one ever asks for it.
I don't know if Matilda's ever been on a banned list. Probably with the child abuse element in there.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Although, I do think it's kind of hilarious to try and ban Matilda specifically, just because it is so book-oriented. Like, let's burn this book about boots. Burn it, ban it. I'm thinking something else now. I would not be surprised if The Witches had been banned, though, because it's about witches.
Yep, I wouldn't be surprised about that at all.
So.
In fact, I'd be more surprised if it wasn't. Why was the book Matilda banned? Because of explicit content and violence. That doesn't mention where it was banned specifically in this one, but a 2-second Google search reveals that, yes, it has been banned at least once.
There we go.
So, there you go. Another sign that it's a good one. As if you needed it.
So, I would definitely recommend reading this. If you have kids or no kids, I would definitely recommend just giving them a stack of Roald Dahl books and be like, see you in a week, kid.
There you go. If you have a smart kid who's getting into chapter books.
Yeah, for sure.
This would be a reasonable one for a smart kid to read fairly early on.
Uh-huh.
Because they'll probably identify with Matilda.
Yeah.
And
if you like to read as a kid, you identify with Matilda.
And it's, you know, maybe a shade tougher than some chapter books, but it's definitely a kid's book.
Yes, definitely.
And you can read it with them and enjoy it just as much as well.
So, I guess that's all we have to say about Matilda.
Sweet.
Neither one of us are really reading anything new because... Because
we're recording this less than 24 hours after our last recording.
Yeah. I just thought I'd put in a really quick plug again for Graceling, which I'm still reading. I'm now more than a chapter into it. And it's basically like a teenager's version of, like, different kingdoms and court politics and, like, undercover kidnappings and stuff. I almost said, like, teenager's version of Game of Thrones, but it's not quite like Game of Thrones. But there's kind of this magical fantasy element in it, too. And apparently, I was kind of looking at it online the other day, and it's insanely popular. It's the first book of a trilogy, and it's kind of one of those new up-and-coming YA trilogies that people love. So, I guess we'll find out if it becomes, like, the next Hunger Games or something.
I guess so.
So yeah, that's all. If you want to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at www.novelideaspodcast.com.
Or email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
You can find us on Twitter at @novelideaspod.
And for our iTunes listeners, or people who would like to be iTunes listeners, we're available there, and please feel free to comment, rate, review, however that stuff works over there as well.
Yep. So, for next week, we are actually doing what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast. We are reading The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, which is something everyone I knew read in high school, at least.
Yeah, I had to read it in high school.
A lot of people hated it. I was one of the few who liked it, so we'll see if it still holds up.
Yeah, I don't really remember particularly liking or hating it.
But if you want to search for it at a Johnson County library, apparently it's YA, which makes no sense whatsoever. And there are a lot of fun issues to get into with that book.
Yeah.
Adultery and sin and all sorts of stuff.
That's right. So right after you have your young reader read Matilda, have him read The Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, exactly. And then Dracula.
And then Dracula.
And then The Giver. And then...
Kind of a weird order here.
Yeah. All right, well.
Okay, well, that's all for this week. And we'll see you next time.
Bye. Okay. R-E-A-B-A-B-O-O-K.